the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, time to get petty. Text in your petties, 713-572-4610. We've already got a couple of them here. We'll read yours in just a little bit. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. We do the petty cast every Tuesday at 8 a.m. We compile all the pettiness from over the weekend, from Monday and Tuesday. There's pettiness every day in this world. Not sure if you've noticed. Head to social media. Easy to find. The very first one is very funny to me. I don't follow the big three, Seth, the three on three league that involves a lot of retired guys, a lot of former NBA guys that are still in some semblance of playing shape,
but the league's done very well.
It's done fine. Popular. It's still around
in this day and age enough to, you know, popular online to make money. Yeah.
Get an audience, man, for sure. I've never seen this. So first of all, I didn't know there was a big three draft. There is a big three draft. And apparently, Michael Beasley, remember Michael Beasley? Second overall pick in the draft a long time ago, out of Kansas State. Always looked like he was stoned. He had the stoned eyes. He still does. He's got those, you know, kind of sleepy eyes. Good player. Yeah. He's a solid enough player. Peaked with Minnesota. I think he averaged 19 a game one year. About a 12 or 13 point a game guy in the NBA. Had a nice career. I'm sure he made millions of dollars. He's in the big three. He's angry that his Miami big three team, 305 Miami, took Lance Stephenson with the first pick in the big three draft. So he's asking for a trade.
That's a drama already, locker room drama.
We have a,
or at least a corner of the locker room drama.
Yes,
this, in the big three.
Yeah,
it's not like you can have a separate locker room.
A triangle shaped locker room, and each guy has a corner. Yeah, exactly. So I found that funny more than anything else, that we've got a trade demand in the big three, and now Lance Stephenson too can be a little bit annoying. Remember, he was the guy that used to go up to LeBron in games and blow in his ear.
Give him wet willies and stuff.
Yeah.
His last year in the NBA was 2022.
Lance Stephenson or Michael Beasley? Stephenson?
Lance Stephenson.
Yeah. So it's just a nice little outlet for these guys to still go play some hoops and get on TV or whatever. But it is a trade demand. Now, I guess Michael Beasley and Lance Stephenson have some sort of made-for-TV or maybe made-for-streaming event coming up that they're going one-on-one. And the winner gets $100,000. So maybe he just, you know, he don't want to be getting too friendly with the guy he's got a one-on-one coming up with.
We're celebrating what here? Michael Beasley's pettiness?
Beasley, a trade demand in the big three. Come on, dude. Like, it's yes. Yeah, we're celebrating.
Yeah, I approve
pettiness.
Of it. I approve of it 100%.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
Create drama, too.
Trade.
We're talking about it because there's drama, damn it.
Yep.
That's what brings the eyeballs.
That's it. Pettiness and drama. I just found it funny more than anything else. My biggest reaction, big three has a draft, huh? Okay. Frankie Louvu, former Carolina Panthers linebacker, now on the Washington Commanders, maybe best known to the average football fan as one of a handful of Commanders that turned themselves into heat-seeking missiles on a goal line tush push last year in the NFC title game. Frankie Louvu sat down, and I apologize, I don't have where this interview was conducted, but he was asked about the tush push and the vote. The vote is coming up on the tush push getting banned in the next 24 hours or so. Sometime. Frankie Louvu, here is his take on the tush push.
You are, in a way, linked to this play because of that moment. You also have a powerful voice. This week, in a matter of a couple of days, the league is going to vote on the tush push, whether to keep it or to ban it. As a guy who has been out there in a playoff game trying to defend it, is it unfair and should the league ban it?
My personal opinion.
Yeah.
I think they should ban it. You know what I mean? But I know the argument is going to be about like, hey, you guys have to stop it. Don't get us in short yardage and whatnot. But yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a Chico play, man. You got Jordan Mailata on the right. You got, you know, it's pretty much a scrum in rugby. That's how I kind of look at it. And we got to have a scrum too on the other side. And the scrum is, you know, we have a cadence where we all go at once. It's not like you hard count or and this and that where, you know, now you're getting us or myself jumping over the pile thinking that they're about to snap the ball. And that's just my own personal opinion, and I'm going to leave it at that.
I like that. So their strategy when, and this is why the tush push, I think, conversation got so much. It was a huge part of both championship games. So it's a boring play, and you think, okay, but how many times during the season, whatever. In the championship game, it was huge, and the Commanders were trying to sell out on the goal line, and Luvu kept jumping across and getting multiple penalties to the point where the officials said, hey, if they do this again, we're just going to award a touchdown to the Eagles.
Yep.
Like, that's where it was comical almost, but also kind of embarrassing for the league. I think the difference, I can't, so it didn't work for the Commanders. They had this strategy where they were basically going to say, all right, we're going on one. Whatever the snap count is, we're going on one.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out. It didn't work out for them, but the Bills, one of the reasons they lost was that their tush push was not working.
It was terrible. It was
at
awful.
All.
Yeah.
So you got to credit the Chiefs for actually loading up and stopping what at one point a couple years ago people thought was an unstoppable play.
Yep.
That's the part where if I'm making an argument on behalf of not banning the tush push, I'm getting up and saying, look, you guys, you're acting like this is unfair competitively or something. The Chiefs won that competition in the championship game. I think it's more that just – I think the league just doesn't like that it's a boring play.
I think so, too. 100% I think that. I think Frankie Luvu is being petty about the tush push because it was embarrassing for them to keep jumping over the top of the pile. What were they offsides? At least two or three times. Enough to where the referee had to explain to the crowd, I am allowed to award a touchdown here if I want to.
Well, you know, the other part that makes this interesting is that this year they're using that, they're going to use that wireless system to track the ball and make first down judgments.
Yeah.
So part of what was so boring about it is that after each play,
they gotta measure.
You're trying to figure out exactly whether it was the right spot. And in the playoffs especially, they're getting a lot of extra help from the booth. So it's an extra source of controversy because you really can't tell where the ball is. So I don't know, maybe this year when there is a tush push and they can track the ball exactly for the first down, and maybe it'll be a quicker process.
Yeah.
It was like during spring training, we were watching the when we were watching the automated strike zone and the challenge system, it was I didn't mind it at all because it was so fast.
Yeah.
It was boom, look up the scoreboard, there you go, there's a judgment, let's play on.
Yep, absolutely. All right, keep texting in. We'll read some of your petties on here, 713-572-4610. I've got a couple personal petties, Seth. These are my own petties. Number one, saw a graphic yesterday that was put up by NBA Central. Good informative aggregator account. It's at the Dunk Central. If you're an NBA fan, give it a follow. They'll post odds. They'll post videos, graphics, things like that. It's the phrasing of this tweet that I take great umbrage with. The Brooklyn Nets are the favorites to win the Russell Westbrook sweepstakes per Bovada official. And they are. They're 6-1. They've got a handful of teams. So the Rockets are not on this list. They've got about a dozen teams on here, ranging from the Nets at 6-1 to the Lakers at 25-1 to, quote, win the Russell Westbrook sweepstakes. Here's my issue. Sweepstakes are something that you should feel greatly rewarded for winning.
Yeah.
Winning is something that you should feel when you get a player that puts you over the top. Russell Westbrook is an inefficient player who very recently has had articles written about his immaturity and just how he loses his mind at the end of basketball games.
Well, so Hill's, maturing is a process. It takes time. So
he's 86 years old. Finally. Yeah.
This is like winning a sweepstakes where you win 3 tons of sardines.
Yeah.
And you,
thank you.
Like, they're really good sardines. But by the way, you do have to pay taxes on this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, taxes, tariffs, the whole nine yard. So that bothered me yesterday. Like, win the Russell Westbrook. At least put air quotes around win. You know what I mean? Like, those wouldn't be annoying air quotes either.
Get it together, dunkcentral.com.
Yeah, thank you, Seth. Thank you for backing me on that. My second one, okay. Why can't Caitlin Clark fouling Angel Reese and the subsequent animus that ensued afterwards after a hard foul just be a hard foul and a dust-up and not trigger a race war in America? Why can't it just be a hard foul in a WNBA game?
Well, Sean, okay, the short answer is there's almost nothing that won't trigger some kind of war on social media these days.
Yeah, I know.
It's frustrating with these because if you just try to... The problem with conversations like this is that there are a whole lot of people that want to make it racial. So a lot of times you end up like in that you try to talk about that specific situation and you're saying, well, okay, you know, in Caitlin Clark's case here, I think this was actually just a hard foul, prevented an easy layup, et cetera, et cetera. But then you get 2,900 other people that are jumping on or like, yeah, and she's white, it's cool. Or vice versa. It's all the other people having shouting matches about it instead of talking about the actual
this
baseball.
This thing yesterday with RG3 and Ryan Clark, oh my God. RG3 tweets out that, boy, I think that Angel Reese legitimately hates Caitlin Clark. And Ryan Clark goes and on his Pivot podcast does this long thing about how RG3 has now been married to two white women, so he doesn't know the plight of black women and this and that. And then RG3 does a video where he's saying, you came after my family and you're a horrible teammate at ESPN. And Ryan Clark's coming back on social media. No, you're a horrible teammate on ESPN. Then you got people commenting, Jason Whitlock commenting on both of them. Yeah. And I'm sitting here thinking, if I just jumped in the middle of all this, and I said, what is causing all this? Oh, this foul that was barely even a foul in a WNBA game. Are you effing kidding me right now?
I thought you meant you would jump into the conversation.
No. I feel uncomfortable even bringing up that it exists, if you want to know the truth.
Hey, fellas. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Hey, I got a white wife myself, and this is what I think about
it. Like RG3, I've been married to two white women. I feel I've got an opinion on this thing here. No, I just think
that's what I always think about what you and RG3 have in common.
Oh, yeah. Corniness. And we've both been married to two white women. Same exact thing. Yeah, I mean, why can't this just be a hard foul in a WNBA game? Why does it have to turn into this, man?
With the crossover hits, I've really tried to just try to create a separation between church and state.
Yeah.
I've done a pretty good job of whenever something becomes a crossover social, whatever it is, unless it's justified, I just stay the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah. Man. Wow. All right, last petty here, and I'll read a couple of yours. Todd Whitting is the head coach of...
Okay, I have them. Okay, go ahead.
What's that?
You said, oh, some of our listeners. Okay,
some of our listeners.
I thought you said you'd read some of mine. I was like, oh, do I have a homework assignment?
Yours the audience. Yeah, sorry about that. No, I'm sure you have some, but if you want to get them out there,
sure. Yeah, totally.
Todd Whitting, U of H Bass, a baseball coach, was on with Will Kunkel on Will's Kicking It with Kunkel segment, and the Cougs have these awesome Columbia blue or H-Town blue, we'll call it, uniforms that they wear. I mean, they're really cool. We know that the University of Houston has had issues trying to jump into the H-Town blue swimming pool.
Well, yeah, the Titans were threatening to sue them at one point. Yeah.
Thanks to Amy Adams. Here are the rules under which the U of H baseball team is allowed to wear their H-Town blue uniforms.
Feedback's been great. You know, the Twitter feeds have gone crazy. Recruits love them. So, you know, that's something we'll be able to wear a little more often, you know, down the road.
So can you wear them more often? How do you finagle
from
that?
What I understand right now, the deal with the NFL, with the, you know, the Oilers scheme and things like that, is has to be at home against an in-state opponent. We got, I guess, a waiver on the deal last night because we didn't get to use against Arizona against A&M last week. But that right now is the thing, is it's at home against the in-state opponent, and we use it for the Big 12 games or, you know, big ones like Texas A&M.
So this is all because of the Titans. I don't. Yeah. They own that color for the world.
Yes, apparently they do. Will, they own that color
for the world.
For the world. I like Will. I like Will Kunkel. The look on his face is classic too. He does the whole thing with his hands. He's like, the world.
Feels like something out of The Handmaid's Tale for me, Sean. Yeah. It was like, hell no, listen, sweetie, you can wear that color, but only at home. You're not allowed to wear it out of the house. That's what they're trying to do to us. They're trying to keep us in a corner.
I would rather be the complete victim in this and not be able to wear them at all than have to kowtow to some stipulations from Amy Adams Strunk in the NFL on this.
We're going to wear them all over every damn state in the
Union.
Well,
yeah, or go rogue. Or go rogue and say, sue me, bro.
Yeah.
But I would rather they just like, I would rather the Titans be made out to be the complete bad guy in this. In state, at home. Like, oh, that we've got a kowtow to the stipulations of Amy Adams Strunk just bothers
me.
The whole in-state at home
seems a little bit redundant, but I guess if they play a neutral site game and they're the home team, they're not allowed to.
I don't know. I just think that there's any stipulations on it. Is bothersome.
Does U of H play home games on the road at some point?
I don't know. Tournament, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they.
Probably that's it. They had to add the in-state just in. I don't know. So if they play in a
I'm petty about
in the state of Texas.
I'm petty. I mean, you parsing this out is making me pettier about it right now.
Yeah.
All right. Petty's from the text page. Here's my question with the schedule. Why the hell do they schedule the Texans to play the Jags in Jacksonville in week 3 when it's hot as hell, then have the Texans host the Jags in Houston in November? Doesn't it make sense to reverse that? They could play indoors in AC in week 3. Then they can play outdoors in November. Two years ago, fans literally died from heat stroke in Jacksonville.
Here's the thing. Okay, you know, that's interesting because at the very end, at the first part, all I was thinking about was like competitively and everything.
Yeah.
Like the Texans don't get to make this schedule, you know, based to their own needs and wants. So the Jaguars have a heat advantage because theoretically, you know, against other teams, northern teams, They're gonna play some games in September at home.
Yeah.
If all of a sudden you started to try to do it based completely on
nice weather,
you know,
everywhere,
what the fans want or whatever, then that would mean okay, Jacksonville's not allowed to have a home game in the month of September, or any of these southern teams.
Yeah,
that's why because it doesn't make any sense.
Yep. By the way,
like by that logic, it's a very Texan-centric logic. I can't get petty over this. Yeah, the warm weather outdoor stadiums are going to have home games in September.
It's just going to happen. D'Amico's first win as Texans head coach, Week 3, Jacksonville, 2 years ago. So back to the scene. Circle of life, man. My pettiness this morning is every time I turn on Nick Wright's show on FS1, he's always talking crap about some Houston team. I loved his show in Houston. I love Sports Radio 610. He's kind of being a douche canoe now.
Hey, screenshot that text and send it to Nick.
Okay.
And just tell Nick to reach out to that guy personally.
I will. Oh, because his phone number's on. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I will. I'll need to draw a map. I'll need to draw a map for Nick because of the way our text page divides texts up. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah. Let's, no, the thing about Nick is that, at some point he's going to piss you off. He's very, very good at it because a lot of times – and annoyingly, he always backs everything up with data.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he really hits you where it hurts when you don't have a good answer for what he just said.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very good. He's got the info, man. No doubt. As a black man and a true sports fan, I really am ignoring the whole Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese thing. I'm tired, man.
Well, yeah. No, you're tired because this is what happens so much these days. It's like you might have a certain position on a topic. And you say, hey, I believe position A for this reason. And person B says, no, I support position B for whatever reason. But then all of a sudden online, you got 2,700 other people who agree with position A, but for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people out there that are saying, okay, from a basketball standpoint, I think Angel Reese was correct for this reason. No, I think Caitlin Clark was correct for this reason. And that's you two having a conversation. But then all of a sudden, everybody else outside jumps
in.
Want to make it about a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah. It's easier to text. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Ross Tucker joins us at the top of the hour. It'll be good to catch up with Ross. Okay. A lot of talk about the rookie window, the contract, a rookie contract for a quarterback. Brock Purdy just got a big extension this week. He's had a pretty good rookie contract so far. What constitutes a successful usage of that rookie contract window, and are the Texans on track for that right now with C.J. Stroud? That is coming up next.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we know that it's a big deal in the NFL that when you find a quarterback, a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, one that you've drafted oftentimes high, but in the case of Brock Purdy, he was drafted as low as you can be drafted, Mr. Irrelevant. When you find that guy, the big thing is got to take advantage of the cheap labor that you've got with a quarterback on a rookie deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing in the NFL these days. Ever since 2011, when they changed the CBA around to actually have a rookie wage scale, right?
Yep.
And so my question is, Seth, what constitutes a successful usage of a player's rookie contract window, which for purposes of this conversation, we'll just call the first 4 years of a player's career, like the first 4 years that they're in the league. Is it Super Bowl? Do you have to win a Super Bowl for it to be a successful usage?
No, I think that because it's one, as we know, it's really, really hard to win a championship in any sport.
Yep.
So if that's your only yardstick for whether or not you took advantage of it, it's just like you could handle it perfectly and only one of the teams might actually do, you know, be successful. For me, it's always been that, A, yes, you want to have a competitive team and have a chance at winning a Super Bowl. But if you don't win the Super Bowl, did you surround your young quarterback with the right circumstances and make it easier for him so that in those first 4 years, he can learn how to be an NFL quarterback and then become that guy that after you give him his big deal, he can do more with less?
Yeah.
So, all right, by the time the Chiefs traded away Tyreek Hill, Pat Mahomes had become a quarterback who didn't need to lean on Tyreek Hill as much. So for CJ, I look at it as that I think they did the right thing last year. They went out and got Stephon Diggs. They botched the offensive line side of it. If you just, over these next 2 years, you want to take advantage of CJ's lower salary cap to give him an environment where he can be that complete NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
And get him to like accelerate his development to where he's just a bona fide Tom Brady type of dude by the time he's in his fifth season.
I like that a lot. I like that view of it a lot. So along those lines, do you think that the Texans, in a way, stunted C.J. Stroud's growth last year with the offensive line play and maybe the coach? Obviously, they feel that they failed in both those areas to some degree because they fired the O-line coach and they fired the offensive coordinator.
I think ultimately it could end up being really good that he went through that and he saw just he had to navigate so many second and long and third and long situations. But yeah, in the short term, in terms of him really getting to like refine that clock in his head, to fine tune that clock in his head and to be able to go through his progressions and do all that stuff, I think Bobby Slowick and that offensive line performance last year might have really just it slowed it down.
Yep. You and I were talking about this yesterday when we were kind of breaking down Brock Purdy's new contract. I went back yesterday and kind of looked through Super Bowls of the last rookie contract quarterbacks and Super Bowls over the last, I guess it would be 14 seasons, back to 2011. There's only two that have won Super Bowls on their rookie deals.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes in year three won a Super Bowl, did not play his rookie year, played a little, but Alex Smith was a starter, lost in the AFC title game, but won the MVP of the league in his second year. And then he won the Super Bowl and a Super Bowl MVP in his third year. And then he lost a Super Bowl in his fourth year. That's probably the gold standard for performance by a team and an individual. I mean, it's not even close. It's an MVP and a Super Bowl MVP and a Super Bowl ring and an appearance in another Super Bowl in the first 4 years you're in the league. Kansas City did it better than anybody else.
That's the gold standard for how to handle it. And I would say even you look at guy like Tom Brady winning a Super Bowl, that team was a lot more about the defense and the running game than it was the quarterback himself when he was a young player.
Yep.
That where you got that kind of a performance out of your quarterback and that kind of not just individually but as an offense and all that. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to find one better than that.
Russell Wilson is close. He's very close. Russell Wilson, who of course started as a rookie, supplanted Matt Flynn, who never saw the field for the Seahawks, at least not that year. Russell Wilson's first 4 years, lost in the divisional round of the playoffs, won a Super Bowl, lost a Super Bowl on an interception he threw, and then lost in the divisional. So made the playoffs 4 years and made two Super Bowls and won a Super Bowl. That's pretty damn close. I would say I'd put Mahomes ahead of him just because Mahomes was the linchpin of the team. Russell Wilson was a little more like the Brady that you're talking about. Like that defense was won by the Super Bowl. That defense won that Super Bowl and was the big foundation for them those seasons, not so much. Russell Wilson was good, but he wasn't.
But they could also afford. I mean, they could afford a lot of those guys on defense because, we saw that over the ensuing years after Russell Wilson got his contract. It's a lot harder to build that same type of team.
Yep. There's others. There's five others that made a Super Bowl but didn't win a Super Bowl on their rookie deals. Joe Burrow, probably the most famous one. He, of course, injured for a big chunk of his rookie year, and then they get to the Super Bowl his second year in the league. The Bengals go to the Super Bowl. Lost in the AFC title game the next year, and then he was injured and only played 10 games in 2023. So his is either I'm hurt or we're going deep into the postseason if you're Joe Burrow. On his rookie deal, I know this past year he put up MVP numbers for a team with a horrific defense, but we're just talking his first 4 years in the league.
Boy, it's impressive. I think with Joe Burrow, I might rank him above Russell Wilson just in terms of his actual performance and how much of a driving force he was.
Yeah.
Now, with Russell Wilson, you know what we kind of forget about sometimes? Is it with Russell Wilson, I'll give him more credit because that was when the zone reads and everything else was really just ambushing the NFL.
Yeah.
And so Russell Wilson's legs were more of a bigger factor then than they would be in today's age because defenses have adjusted to it.
Yep. Jalen Hurts, first 4 years. Now, he won a Super Bowl this past year, but he was not on his rookie deal anymore. Four starts his rookie year, went 1-3. Then he lost in the wild card round, lost in a Super Bowl, and then lost in the wild card round again. And that second loss in the wild card round was on a team that, man, it looked like Nick Sirianni was closer to getting fired than getting an extension. He just signed an extension yesterday, you know? Yeah.
For the way Nick Sirianni handled it, I don't know. I mean, you got to a Super Bowl, then you took a huge step backwards with a lot of seemingly systemic type issues.
Yes.
So, and then you win a Super Bowl. So he ends up winning the Super Bowl. It's not when he's on his rookie contract. And yet, I still feel like that was a pretty damn good run. And that, like, the big fault here is that you took a year off between Super Bowls, or a couple years off between Super Bowls.
Yeah, yeah, no, that is a nice first 4 years in the league for sure for Jalen Hurts.
They got him on a deal that, like, because Jalen Hurts doesn't fit the conventional mold of what you want to get out of your quarterback in the passing game or what have you. I feel like they got him on a pretty good. He's really valuable to that team and the way they operate.
Yep.
But they got him on kind of a bargain contract compared to a lot of other quarterbacks.
Brock Purdy, it was a genesis of this segment, lost in the NFC title game his rookie year, lost in a Super Bowl, and then he went 6-11 with lots of injuries. This to me will be one of the more intriguing ones out of all these guys that are getting these new big deals here. You know, just because seventh round pick, man, this is uncharted territory for the new age of $50 to $60 million quarterbacks. So this will be an interesting one. The other two, real quick, Colin Kaepernick made a Super Bowl on his rookie contract with the San Francisco 49ers. It didn't look like the rest of these guys in terms of the productivity, how it got done. He's very much a get it done with his legs guy. Didn't start any games his rookie year in 2011, then lost in the Super Bowl with Jim Harbaugh as his coach. Only started 7 games, but he was the starter by the end of the year. Lost in the NFC title game the next year, then went 8-8, and then kind of backslid, and we all know how the Colin Kaepernick saga went from there.
I could have Kaepernick and Purdy the whatever category it is for just getting the absolute most
no doubt
out of either whatever the salary cap figure was or the future career. Brock Purdy's got a lot more football to play.
Yeah.
But in terms of just getting above and beyond expectations with where they were drafted, Kaepernick wasn't Mr. Irrelevant. But those are pretty damn good bargains.
Jared Goff is the last one when he was with the Rams. He was a disaster as a rookie when Jeff Fisher was his head coach. They brought in Sean McVay, and it all turned around. Lost in the wild card round his second year. Lost in the Super Bowl, one of the most boring Super Bowls of all time in 2018. 13-3, the final score. And then he missed the playoffs, went 9-7 his fourth year. And obviously we know how it ended with Jared Goff in L.A. He got traded for Matthew Stafford, which seems to be been a good move for both guys, Stafford and Goff.
So the big thing here for these guys that have really gotten the absolute most out of their rookie quarterbacks and on their contracts, the standard in terms of performance on the field seems to be, man, a lot of these guys have reached a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Boy, making a Super Bowl is way further than the Texans have ever gone in the playoffs.
Yeah.
If they can take that next step forward at some point, if you don't, at the very least, bare minimum, you got to get out of the divisional round at some point here. But in the next 2 years, in the next 2 seasons, can you make a Super Bowl and or win a Super Bowl? That's all I ask. That's all I ask.
But that's
I'm not greedy.
No,
I just want you to make a Super Bowl.
That's all.
Is that so hard to ask?
That's all. And if you want to surpass Russell Wilson, you need to make two and win them both, not win one and lose one like he did. Yeah. I don't think anybody's catching Mahomes in his first 4 years, unless CJ wins 2 Super Bowls. You know, Mahomes won one. But Mahomes won an MVP and a Super Bowl MVP. Didn't play really. He did that in 3 years, really, not 4, because he didn't start as a rookie. So But this is the list, man. Like, that's the list. And Texans can get to a Super Bowl. CJ's on this list with these guys as well. I like your criteria, though, Seth. Like, independent of the team accomplishments. Like, yeah, do you feel like this is a guy that you can function in a $60 to $65 million a year quarterback world? That's the goal.
That's the big leap you make when you give that quarterback that contract. Do you feel like, okay, now we don't have to spend as heavily on wide receiver because we having just Nico Collins and a couple guys, if that's how it ends up being at some point, we can still be a good offense with that because our quarterback is so refined.
No doubt. this goes back to to Amy Adams Strunk trying to monopolize the color blue. Does the sky have permission to be light blue? Probably not.
No.
She's suing
only
the sky.
Only in the state of Texas.
She's suing the sky. Yeah, right. The sky's got to be green in Texas. All right. Coming up next, if you're looking for a team to root for in the NBA playoffs based on the conduct of their star player, I've got a sales pitch for you in the next segment. Ross Tucker joins us at the top of the hour. Stay there. It's Payne and Pendergast.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. It's probably, I don't know if Rocket fans have a dog in the fight with any of these teams. Minnesota and OKC get started tonight in the Western Conference. The Pacers and the Knicks get started, I'm assuming, tomorrow, sometime this week. So we'll have the Eastern Conference, Western Conference finals get going. I don't know that anybody had this as the four teams that we would have left in this thing, but I think both these series have the potential to be fun. Each of these teams has a star on the team, a face of the team that has yet to win an NBA championship. So somebody new is going to be allowed inside that velvet rope that in the last few years Jason Tatum has gotten into, and Giannis Antetokounmpo won a championship. We know that the Warriors have won several championships. Nikola Jokic, champion. So there is a line that kind of separates those guys from everybody else. That's just how the NBA works. So either, I would say either Anthony Edwards or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the West, or Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Halliburton in the East. If you're looking for one of those guys to root for, this is a pretty good story. Tyrese Halliburton was on Pat McAfee yesterday, and he surprised the Indiana Pacer fan, specifically Tyrese Halliburton fan. If you haven't seen the video, it was a viral video from over the weekend, one of several viral videos of New York Knicks fans acting the fool. And there was an Indiana Pacers fan wearing a Tyrese Halliburton jersey in New York, leaving Madison Square Garden, that his name is Hans Perez, and he's a firefighter up in New York, I would assume. And there were Knicks fans picking up bags of garbage and throwing them at, like, big, gigantic bags of garbage and throwing them at him and hitting him in the head with garbage. And then following and menacing this guy as he walked down the street, just like a wave of dozens and dozens of Knicks
fans. Oh, that guy. Yeah, all right. I remember that video. Right? Yeah, that was it. And the guy was, and he looked, he didn't look like he was freaked out or panicking about it.
No, he was a firefighter. He's probably seen worse, you know?
I was kind of impressed that he was kind of just like, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. But then he just...
He was walking away. He wasn't trying to fight anybody.
He was walking away, but they... Hundreds of them, it looked like, walking after him, you know?
Yeah.
It was a pretty menacing scene. So it looked like McAfee had this Hans Perez on his show just to get his version of what was going on. And then he surprises him with Tyrese Halliburton, joins him on the show and pops this on him.
I want to personally bring you and a plus one out here to come to game four here in Indiana. I'll bring you guys out here, put you guys up, get you guys seats to the game. The Pacers, everybody in our organization wants to make sure you're taken care of. All the team's excited to meet you. Talking about. Everybody's seen the video. So, man, we want to bring you out here. And, man, I'm really excited about that. So
you and Hans. I believe that's on Tuesday. You're able to make the trip. I know scheduling, obviously, as a firefighter or something.
You know, I gotta talk to the guys. I mean, I'm pretty sure we could work something out. Where I could, to come see the. Thank you. I just want to say thank you, Tyrese, man. Yo, you are awesome. The team is awesome. I appreciate that. And man, let's go Pacers, man. Let's go Pacers.
All right, so that was really cool, man. It was just, that's one of those things, like, the you know, somebody came in and made it right.
Who are the various Houston fans that have gone viral for getting unfair treatment? I think the most notable has been up with the Yankees at various times, right? The guy that got hit by the bottle in the bathroom while he was taking a whiz. Do we remember if the Astros did anything nice for him or anything?
I don't remember. I don't know if they did or didn't, but that was the one that immediately popped into my head. Have any Texan fans? If we Googled hard enough, you know how it is at NFL games sometimes. Yeah. You get these fights up in the stands. I'm guessing there's been a Texan fan involved in one at some point.
Oh yeah, 100%. You know? Yeah. No, the Bills are. That's where we were talking yesterday about how the Bills fans at home can be pretty nasty to opposing fans. One of my cousins almost got in a fight with a Bills fan once because he was the kid. Like, he was at one of our games up there, and his 6-year-old son was wearing a Texans jersey.
Wow.
You know, and after a touchdown, the guy in front of him turned and like started screaming at my 6-year-old. My 6-year-old cousin, like in your face and everything. So the guy's friends ended up kind of moving him and getting it under control.
Okay.
But it was rough, man. Yeah.
What possesses people, man, to do, like, turn around and yell,
Sean?
6-year-old kid. No, that's the answer. I know that's the answer. But
what makes people sometimes the best, but often the worst version of themselves?
Right. But I drink plenty of games. It's never dawned on me to turn around and scream at a 6-year-old.
Because you're not a bad drunk.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it, I suppose. So good job, Tyrese Halliburton. I'm rooting for the Pacers, not because of that story from the McAfee show. I'm rooting for the Pacers because I want the Knicks out of our lives as soon as possible.
Do I know? All I do is every now and then I see somebody on social media complaining out of Indiana about Peyton Manning being at the Nuggets games and not the Pacers games.
Yeah.
I would love it if he's looked at now as a fair weather Pacers fan and he gets booed. I hope he goes to a Pacers finals game and gets booed at home.
Now that would have been fun. Just as I'm saying this, Peter Schrager's literally on TV on Get Up, and his take at the bottom of the screen: Knicks haters need to stop being the fun police. Screw you, Schrager. I'll do what I want to do. But that would have been fun if Denver ended up beating OKC and getting to the NBA finals against Indiana, and then they dangle Peyton Manning over the court like a Money in the Bank briefcase, and the winner gets to keep him or something like that.
Yeah.
It's the Peyton Manning. The winner gets to keep Peyton Manning. Indiana versus Denver. We're not going to get it because Denver stunk in Game 7, but that would have been good. I would have liked that. Knicks fans feel entitled, and law doesn't apply to them. You, sir, have seen the videos, I can tell. Absolutely they do.
What's Schrager's point if he's making that the Knicks haters? Who are the fun police?
I guess the people
don't like the Knicks being there or something?
I don't know.
Or does Schrager have a taste for violence and he wishes that those Knicks fans would have like finished the job?
He doesn't seem like it. I mean, remember, Ben, you got the Schrager in there? I mean, like, the Schrager seemed kind of... Doesn't seem like a violent guy to me. Yeah. Seems a little creepy more than anything
else.
You
want to come over and look at my albums? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah. Mattress Mac in Philly.
Oh, yeah. Mattress Mac and the Verlander couple.
Yes.
Both Mr. and Mrs. Verlander
had
notable exchanges. Now, Verlander, that was the same series where Verlander actually had fun with some Phillies fans by flipping them off. And Phillies fans, that's like... You might as well have given him $20. That's like a gift to them. So they loved that Verlander was having fun flipping him off. But then...
Kate Upton.
Kate Upton, she flipped off some Philly fans there, and it looked like they were... It turns out it was her having fun with the Philly
fans.
Yeah,
no.
But Mattress Mac was getting accosted as an old man for no good reason
whatsoever.
He
didn't back down, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He had to be held back. Good job, Mac. Yeah, he wasn't going to take it. He's not going to let somebody throw a bottle at him like what happened in New York. Hell no. Hell no. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. But that's a good story. I like that Halliburton story, man. Okay, people still texting in over the H-Town blue uniforms that Amy Adams Strunk will not let the University of Houston baseball team wear outside of home games against in-state rivals or something. Amy Adams Strunk is now suing the group Restless Heart over the song "The Bluest Eyes in Texas." Sorry, you're going to need to change the color of the eyes of the woman in that
song. Yeah, the whole, I don't know. Ultimately, if this is ever settled, it's going to be through an annoying series of court cases about intellectual property law. Yeah. And I don't have the intelligence nor the attention span to actually know what the hell's going on with intellectual property. Just suffice it to say, no, I know for sure. If I were the attorney, I would stand up in the Supreme Court and say, oh, come on. It's just bogus, man. Right. She's being petty.
Right.
Can you not see that?
That's it.
You dumbass.
That's
Quit being activist court justices and just let us do what we want. Oh, that's what I would say.
Courtroom Seth. I like Courtroom Seth. There was a massive fight with Colts fans opening day last year, somebody says. Well, that would have been in Indy.
Texans game?
Yeah.
Or in Indianapolis, I mean.
Yeah, that was they opened up in Indy in week one. Okay. I believe that. And
there's never been a melee, any kind of really notable fight, right, that's gotten historical status or anything.
With Texans?
Not like a Malice at the Palace. With any Houston team.
Yeah,
we might be forgetting something from the 70s or something where there was just a big all-out brawl and multiple people were arrested.
Biggio's wife got spit on in Chicago in the 05 World Series, somebody's saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember somebody didn't somebody dump a drink on David Carr's wife or something at one point too, or was it Matt Schaub's wife?
I don't know. That's a good question. If it was David Carr's wife, I wouldn't. That's in my blind spot. I wasn't living here at the time or on radio. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Ross Tucker is going to join us in the next segment. He during the season as our Odyssey NFL insider. We haven't talked to Ross in a while, so we'll catch up with him, get his thoughts on things going on around the NFL. We will do that coming up next.
Podcasting isn't just evolving, it's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, we got to run a business and we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because I think most of us, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.